Adventures of Lolo 2. Our hero Lolo has charmed and enchanted puzzle-loving game players all around the world. And welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Joe.
Adventures of Lolo 2, not to be confused with Essential Game Adventures of Lolo 1, that we will find out later in this episode. It has been about 105 episodes, which is basically 105 weeks. It's been a long time. It's been over 2 years since we have... Actually, it's been exactly 2 years, right? Isn't that the math? 52 times 2, 104?
Yeah,
that's pretty crazy.
Exactly plus a week, plus however many.
All right, screw the weeks. Episode. We're not doing this.
Yeah, let's turn this off.
Screw the podcast.
And I'm done.
Yeah, thank you.
Every Joe, Wikipedia page, we're coming back.
Joe, Adventures of Lolo 1, you know, we voted that on the Essential Games list. Were you looking forward to in Adventures of Lolo 2?
I was quite a bit. I'll say that I had kind of forgotten just how charmed I was with the first one, and I sort of deliberately didn't go back to it so I could just play this one fresh. But I do remember liking it a lot, so, you know, and I like a good puzzle game.
Sean, what's your favorite thing about Adventures of Lolo? Just the franchise?
I like the... Because, like, a lot of puzzle games that we've played just have, like, a very basic, like, lock and key situation. I really liked how Adventures of Lolo 1, it seemed like there were a bunch of different ways to interact with the puzzle, and that made you more like, oh, like, this is a weird emergent behavior that you can take advantage of, or stuff like that, you know. It's more unique than the other puzzle games we played.
Yeah, it's also, at least the first one, we'll get into it about the second one, it's one of those that starts off almost too easy. You feel good doing those puzzles, being like, yeah, I'm so smart, anybody could solve those. And by the end of the game, you're really scratching your head. Huh, how do I get all the, I don't know if they have a name in the manual for these things, but, like, you know, the pink orbs, like, how do I get all that stuff? You know, Adventures of Lolo 2, on the other hand, is the, you know, tell me if this sentence makes any sense. It is the seventh installment of the Japanese Eggerland video game series. It was the fourth game released in European countries and the second game released in the United States and Canada. But Adventures of Lolo 2 was never released in Japan.
What?
That doesn't make any sense. So wait, okay. But Adventures of Lolo 2, in some way, like, had to have come out in Japan, right? Like, as a different name? Like, maybe it was a different number?
Yeah, so the great analysis so far, Sean, because you're right. In some way, it had to come out for it to be part of this Eggerland series. But actually, it's more confusing than you would think. It's not like, oh, Final Fantasy, like, Adventures of Lolo 2 is actually Adventures of Lolo 6 in Japan. It's not like that. Instead, these Adventures of Lolo games take, like, one half of one Eggerland game and another half of another Eggerland game. They just, like, grab the puzzles from various games, and then they also, like, change the sprites a little bit to be, like, one cohesive look. So basically, they're just stealing the puzzles, but technically remaking the games, and so that's why Adventures of Lolo 2 never released in Japan, because they wouldn't be new puzzles, but it would technically be a new game.
So I'm guessing it's kind of like a best of Eggerland is like Adventures of Lolo.
Right. Which are the good puzzles? We'll just use those. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if they actually test the puzzles beforehand and be like, yeah, these are the ones people will like.
I'm sure they just throw them in there, you know? I'm sure they don't even test the puzzles normally.
Yeah, they don't even design them. They just put stuff down and hope that it's a puzzle.
It definitely feels more confusing than most Japanese adaptation video games that we get over here in America, where it's just like, oh yeah, it's the same game, but they removed all the licensed stuff, or, oh yeah, it's the same game, but two is three and three is four. Instead, this is really hard to keep track of because you actually have to play all of the, if you wanted to, if you're like a huge Eggerland fan, you'd have to play all the Japanese games first and then notice the repeated puzzles in Adventures of Lolo.
Maybe it's like a publicity thing. They're like, even our releases will be, like, it'll be puzzling to just understand, like, what these are.
Now they'd have to make it like an ARG or something.
Yeah.
Like that, you know?
Well, maybe just no one's went to, you know, the woods in Canada somewhere to dig up the floppy disk that had the original game on it.
That reminds me of, like, when developers talk about their games nowadays, and they're like, yeah, nobody ever found out about this secret, and then, like, the whole community, like, comes together and tries to find out about that secret. It happened with most notably the Arkham City game, where those guys eventually found out the clue to, like, open up one of the boats to find out about Scarecrow in Arkham Knight. This all sounds weird if you don't know what I'm talking about, but basically, like, they got enough hints from the developers because nobody could figure it out on their own.
Oh.
Yeah. So when you make things that hard.
Wasn't there recently, like, a two-player mode discovered in, like, a classic NES game? I'm looking it up right now. I remember hearing something about this that, like, nobody knew about until years later.
Isn't it Punch-Out?
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was Punch-Out.
There's a two-player mode in Punch-Out?
There's a two-player mode in Punch-Out, apparently, where you can play as...
I don't think it was discovered when we did the episode.
Yeah, you can play as the, I don't remember any of their silly names, but I don't want to use Mike Tyson because it's too obvious. But, like, the other guys, you can play as them.
I'm just surprised that... Like, there wasn't, like, a little brother that was just mashing the controller and didn't just figure it out at some point.
Oh, no, he did, but Nintendo took him.
I think maybe just a little brother that was pretending to play wrote this article, always believing that there was two players, and was like, oh, look, I discovered the two-player mode.
That's him?
Yeah.
The two-player mode in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out is a new feature for Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. So technically not a new feature. Adventures of Lolo 2 maybe draws some similar parallels where, you know, it's a new game, but how much is actually new? What do you guys notice? What is new in the Adventures of Lolo 2?
Well, I'm guessing, and again, I didn't replay one, so I don't remember everything about it, but it does feel like a lot more things get introduced a lot more quickly. You mentioned how in the first game, you're like, okay, this is easy at first, and then it gets harder and harder. I feel that level of progression, but I feel like the puzzles, I guess from what I remember, I feel like the puzzles progress a little more quickly in this game.
I know exactly what you're saying, Joe, because in the first game, they take the time,
it's teaching you.
Yeah, exactly. Not as straightforward as Super Mario Brothers World 1-1, but it's showing you what you can do. Adventures of Lolo 2 on Puzzle 1 immediately assumes that you have played Adventures of Lolo and understand how the game works.
That was how I was going to describe it. This is like an expansion pack in the same way that those, you know, Super Mario 2 hidden levels or whatever, forgotten levels, that in the same way that was kind of like an expansion pack.
The forgotten levels is really funny.
What are the levels?
They're the lost levels.
Lost levels, whatever.
You forgot. I felt like it was a lot sooner in this game that I came upon levels where I was like, okay, this is going to take me some thinking.
Yeah, these are definitely more densely packed with little things you got to take care of. At least from what I remember from the first one of like sort of how that one escalated. This one, as we were saying, yeah, escalates pretty quickly.
So is that what you want in a puzzle game? Do you want, you know, to put it another analogy, it's like the Picross games on any particular system, right? They haven't reinvented how to play Picross necessarily. Sometimes they do come up with a new mode, and that's pretty cool. But for the most part, people still keep buying those iterations of Picross just to solve more puzzles. The issue wasn't that they needed new features, it was that they solved all the puzzles, so you solved all the puzzles in Adventures of Lolo 1, and now you're like, just give me more of that, I want to play that, and so Adventures of Lolo 2 was like, yeah, here, have some more puzzles. Or does it need to be something like, forget everything you knew about Adventures of Lolo 1, because this time, yeah, it's the Lolo character, but the puzzles are in a side-scrolling environment, or, you know, something like that.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't really know what Picross is, but I've heard of it. I've heard the name used.
Just think of it like, instead of Picross, just think of like Sudoku. You know, like you don't, you can't change the puzzles. You know, like you have to put numbers in boxes. Nobody's going to be able to like change that dramatically without making an entirely new game.
So Adventures of Lolo 1, I think, was a good enough game. We put it on the essential games list that an expansion, a level pack, isn't a bad idea. Like, you know, if you've beat the game, and it's not like, you know, the same replayability comes from a game that you really like the action. If you've solved the puzzle once, maybe it'll take you a minute to remember what the solution is, but you're not going to get the same experience out of solving it again. So I think that if there's any kind of game in which a sequel like this is viable, it is a puzzle game. And if it's this good, then I'm maybe it's not what the doctor ordered when you're in certain moods, but I think that, yeah, there's a market for this. This isn't a bad idea.
Yeah, I feel like it's so not cut and dry as to like how a sequel could work, at least how it could work for me. But I feel like you don't see this very often, like a sequel that is just like using the same elements of the previous game and like, let's just make more of the game. Let's make another full game like that. You know, I always think that it's probably, you know, it probably never hurts to like add some tools, add some stuff, but like I do, you know, wish that like we didn't always have to go to a format change or a format like, I don't know, rework in any way. Not that like all games do, but I think about like Final Fantasy games, like the PS1 or Super Nintendo Final Fantasy games are like some of my favorite style of game, and like other JRPGs never scratch that itch for me. But like Final Fantasy is like, well, no, we've evolved past that. I'm like, well, why can't they make another one that's like that in modern time, that's like in that style? So like, I kind of appreciated this, like Adventures of Lolo, and like, you know, maybe they could have made some other side scrolling or some other version that would have been really cool too. But this was perfectly fine for me. And as far as like getting you right into it, I did like that, that it felt like it moved a little quicker because the puzzles, it's not like they're crazy hard, but it did feel like each puzzle pretty early on became like, okay, like a little bit of an event. Okay, I got to actually sit down and figure this out. And there's never like, okay, well, this one I can just breeze through because it's really obvious.
On a similar note, though, I guess just to play devil's advocate here, when it comes to puzzle games, like you can, like even though the particular arrangement of any puzzle may be different, if it's using the same tool set, like a game like this where it's mostly about moving blocks, shooting enemies to sort of neutralize them and avoiding obstacles, if you're just using those same tools to make your puzzle, it can also, like, just the whole concept can get a little bland. I don't think it did, but in a way that like, say, Portal 2 is so different because, you know, making just different like test chambers for Portal, you're really just sort of rearranging chairs, and it's not really making anything that is really challenging you like the original did when the concept was still new. I do think that there was room in this game for new concepts, and it's been so long that maybe I missed some that were new concepts, so maybe this is unjust criticism, but I also see how that can be used as a complaint.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, personally, like, my personal taste for something like this is I'd like a happy medium, you know? I'd like, you know, yeah, make some changes, make stuff, but I don't necessarily want a format change. But then sometimes there's a format change and I'm like, oh, actually, you convinced me. You sold me on why this worked. So I just think it could go any way for different games.
Sean, I'm glad you brought up Portal, because I was thinking more modern games where this kind of equivalent could happen. And Portal 2 is a good example. But even just thinking about something that didn't happen, The Witness, if they just made, you know, 30 new puzzles and called it The Witness 2, Nobody is looking for that necessarily, right? Because that was a an experience in itself to play that game and unravel the mystery of it. That if you just said, here's 30 new puzzles involving that Witness style, you know, puzzle mechanic stuff, I think the audience now, especially because of the, you know, the year and everything, there would be less of an appetite for that, especially with DLC and everything. But nevertheless, that is kind of what Adventures of Lolo 2 laid down. Not that they are at all the same kind of puzzle game, but the idea remains the same. That, like, I don't know if Adventures of Lolo 2 could get away with this in 2023, at you know, for any other means.
That being said, though, like, in terms of The Witness, and I've only played a bit of it, but I would say that the puzzles in The Witness, at, like, the base level puzzles, not like the higher concept ones where you're like solving puzzles out of puzzles, like those are pretty like just simple, and like maybe they're fun, but it's not the same kind of just enjoying playing with the systems as something like Portal. And I think that that's also sort of how Lolo does it. Like, yeah, technically you're just sort of moving puzzle pieces around, but there's still, I think, a joy to interacting with, you know, the skulls and the Medusas and turning things into eggs. That isn't so much a thing that in The Witness you really just enjoy drawing the lines. I think once it gets to like the higher level stuff, then yeah, that is an experience. But I guess what I'm saying is there's more of a base enjoyment in this game for me than I experienced with The Witness. To change things, I guess, is I'm just rambling now.
Well, I guess what I'm thinking is I'm thinking more in terms of just my personal opinion. If I'm thinking of like, would audiences like it? I agree with you, Mike, about like, you know, about like if they released, yeah, just like a bunch more like puzzles in exactly The Witness style in like a new kind of quote-unquote story or environment. But for me personally, like, I like The Witness a lot. I also haven't completed it, so, you know, I'm taking a little bit of liberties in like assuming I complete it and I still am enjoying it as much. And if like 2 years later or something they're like, oh, there's another game, like, I can't really replay The Witness because like I know the answers to a bunch of puzzles, but like I wouldn't mind like the same. I love this format. I wouldn't mind just like, oh, let's do another game in that format. Like, I think it would probably always be like, oh yeah, cool, show me something new, that would be cool. But like, if you didn't, and it was still like a good, just differently designed game with new puzzles, I don't hate that. Like, it just depends on the game, I guess.
That's a good point, Joe, and I wonder now to throw another idea at you, and feel free to shoot this one down too. Is it too crazy to suggest, obviously not it with this game? Like, they'd have to redesign the levels. So I'm not saying take these levels and now this feature is introduced, but just starting from the ground up and saying, yeah, it's Adventures of Lolo, but this time Lolo can jump. You know, it's like, is that worth exploring? Or is that like, that's not what Adventures of Lolo is. Like, it's about moving blocks and, you know, getting out of tight situations and maneuvering enemies.
No, I think that's totally valid.
Yeah, I think that's worth exploring. If you design puzzles that around that, you've added a new way of thinking, like, totally.
Like, that is that's the add the goo gun for Portal. And that was sort of the difference I was making there of a game that switched it up a bit. That it wasn't like, oh, now Portal is a looter shooter, which I think is sort of the complaint Joe would have had, like, oh, just leave it the same, leave it a puzzle game and not Final Fantasy 16. But and that sort of, I would have appreciated that out of Adventures of Lolo 2. I don't hate that that's all that there is mostly just Adventures of Lolo 1 stuff, in the same way that I wouldn't have hated Portal 2 just being test chambers. But yes, I think that would be totally valid. That'd be an interesting mechanic to add to something like this.
Yeah, definitely. And like, I'm not sure if any of us know, but like, it's been so long since I've played Adventures of Lola 1 that I also don't remember if like anything is new in this. So like, maybe if I had just finished Adventures of Lola 1 and then started this, I would get burnt out a lot more quickly because I'd be like, okay, there's nothing new here. But it wasn't that noticeable to me because
it's not a completely new game. There are no new mechanics, but there are new enemies and obviously new style solutions to problems. But it's not like, oh, and now they added like treadmills or something, you know, like there's no like dynamic environment things that were changed.
Right. And I think that that's if a lot of these enemies that do these unique things are different, like to me, that's plenty of a change. Not saying that I wouldn't welcome other changes, but like that's different than adding a jump. Where it's like, oh, there's just new enemies, just new ways you have to think about solving puzzles that we didn't throw at you last time.
It's not a new dimension, though, like, I think.
Right.
It still keeps the soul of the game, but adds a new dimension to it. It's more so just like, in this version of Call of Duty, you have this gun.
So what is your puzzle solving strategy for a game like this, without, you know, you don't have to give me a specific level and stuff like that, but for a level where you do get stuck, where it's not as obvious as like, oh, well, I just have to push this block to avoid this enemy that would immediately kill me so that I can go around him and get a heart. It's like, how do you solve a situation where you actually don't know immediately what to do? What is your method?
I don't really have a method. I just poke at stuff, you know? Try not to poke at it too much, or you might softlock yourself and then have to burn a life. And those are precious. But, you know, you end up learning what each enemy can do, and you try and get a bird's eye view. Get some altitude on the situation, you know? And then you just keep poking. I mean, that's what I do.
Yeah, I feel like it encourages me to like play in a way I normally don't play, which is like actually to play slowly, you know? Like, I don't know, at first I was like, I'll just try this and I'll try that, but like losing those lives over and over again, it doesn't send you back too far, but sometimes it sends you back far enough that it's annoying.
Yeah.
Because like, sending you back is at first to me is like a weird punishment in this, because it's like, well, I already solved this puzzle, so I can just do it again. It's just time that I'm wasting now.
Some of these rooms, these puzzle rooms, like there are pretty obvious like patterns that can emerge that are like, okay, the theme of this one is X or Y. Like you can see like, oh, there's a row of these Medusas in this section. So obviously trying to figure out a way to make that safe is going to play into this. And oh, there's a lot of just those cute caterpillars around, so probably gonna have to move them. And and then like, oh, those stupid stone men are here, I might just turn the game off. So stuff like that, you know, like you'll get an idea just by looking at the arrangement of how or like where to start, at least.
Yeah, and I think that became my strategy like over time once I kind of got used to it. It was just like, try and do as much as I can in my head before I start acting, which is hard. like that, that's a, at least for me, it's hard for me to visualize that stuff. But I do feel like the game, because at first, not to like change this question into now like a question about the system of losing lives, but at first I did dislike the way that you lose lives, because it just felt like, well, just let me redo this puzzle. I already solved the other puzzles. And I still don't think it's perfect, but I actually don't hate it anymore, because it doesn't send you back too far. It sends you back to the beginning of that tower if you lose all your lives, which is like usually no more than like 4 or 5 levels. But it does make it so like I'm not brute forcing my way through this by just trial and error. Like
I think we had a discussion about how much of a point there is to have lives in a game like this. And I think we came to that conclusion that it's not too punishing. It gives you some stakes. Yeah.
Right. So I actually kind of started to like it, I guess, again. Maybe I already had this opinion last time, too. But I had forgotten by this time, so it's like it made me relearn that.
What mechanics, forget the jumping thing that I suggested, what mechanics would you add to Lolo puzzles after playing a few of these?
See, I don't know that, like, I guess maybe I just keep sounding like I just don't want new mechanics. Like, I'm not against new mechanics like that, but for me, I just think adding new enemies with new, like, behaviors is what, like, actually really significantly would change the game enough, like, depending on the behaviors. But, like, if you put, like, three of these different things in a room together, they all interact in different ways. You have to think about it in a different way. Now, if you introduce, like, a few more that do different things, like, it's just this, like, there's, like, infinite possibility, you know, not literally, but there's just, like, so many more countless possibilities because of the way these things interact. So, like, I think that that's all, like, and I only got to, like, Tower 6 or something in this, so I don't think I'm, like, not even, like, halfway through this game. So, like, maybe they keep doing it, but, like, my want for a game like this is just, like, keep introducing new stuff that, like, that throws me for a loop every time, that I have to, like, make me, like, have to relearn how to think about the game just because of what's coming at me in different levels.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, that gives you a lot of permutations. To have, like, a new enemy to add to the mix, like, technically there are millions of different ways you can arrange a puzzle room, and I don't particularly think that means that it's infinitely replayable, because eventually those ideas are going to get stale. But I think if you're going to add a new mechanic, like, it would have to be something that you can do. Like, right now there are only so many actions that Lolo can do. There's move, push, shoot, shoot, turn them into an egg, basically. And but if you can add another verb to that, I don't know if it's like, I don't know, turn all the water into ice, or just affect the playing field in some way, I think that would be a big enough change that also gives you some input, and it's a new thing to play with. And it wouldn't be too big of a change to say this is a completely different game and the soul of Adventures of Lolo is lost. I think that would be something. That'd be something.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot too. I guess I like that as much as the enemy thing too. Just like giving you new tools that are like small tools.
Right. Like, maybe there could have been more items to collect that would have affected the environment in one way or another. There are some cool, even early on, like the raft and stuff like that, although I believe the raft was in the first game too, so not entirely new, but like more stuff that maybe even affected the environment in a way that didn't have to be interactive. So like you collect this particular icon item, similar to the heart-shaped items around the room, and it's like a hourglass, and it freezes all the enemies in place, so you're more free to manipulate and break the puzzles a little bit, because that's something, you know, as funny as it is to compare this to Breath of the Wild in any way, like, they are, like, each puzzle is a little bit like a shrine. However, in the Zelda shrines, you can complete those puzzles any way you can think of. If you can think of it, you can cheat it, and you can do it, and the game doesn't forbid you. It doesn't, like, say, oh, I see you just crossed that gap that you weren't supposed to cross, like, time to restart the level. Like, it lets you get away with it. I think Lolo could have saw some freedom there, but then the alternative is like, well, does that break the game too much and they can't account for all that? In which case, I would say, fine, forget all of the item things and mechanic stuff, and instead stop focusing so much on puzzles that softlock you in the sense that you have to, I think we talked about this morbidity in the first one where you have to hit the select button to commit suicide to restart the level because you've softlocked yourself, and instead make them more about like fast reflexes, you know, like things that like if you're not on top of the situation, like the things you need to help get the pieces either go away or the enemies catch you. I would have liked to see more of that twitch reflex stuff in this game.
Yeah, and there is some. Like I remember there, like, a lot of the sort of turret-based enemies, like, that move around, like, if you free them, like, the way to solve the puzzle is kind of to free them, but also you gotta, like, get out of their way immediately. And I just see it, like, around, so I'm not saying that, like, you're wrong, Mike, but it's not also a very big part of it. But I would like to see more of it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing, like, some levels be like that, but I wouldn't want to... I do like the like, soft lock element, because I just like the idea of, like... I know a lot of the games we play are, you know, most games we play are, like, twitch-based reflexes sort of thing. Like, I like the little change-up. But I did appreciate once in a while within the game that it changed up into, like, a faster pace. Like, even those ones where those, like, stone blocks are chasing you that, like, freeze when they get near you to block you. Like, you gotta be quick on some of those and stuff. Like, it was a nice change of pace now and again.
Thinking about the kind of game we have here and where we are in the video game landscape that is 1990, is Lolo better suited for Game Boy than NES?
I think yes.
Personally. I mean, it definitely... I don't think it's the same thing to say that this would be very well ported to Game Boy than to say that it would be a better home for it. I think it would be just as fun on the Game Boy, but, like, I don't need to be using a handheld to, like, a sort of small puzzle game.
Right, but, you know, it's a bit of a pick-up-and-play, solve-a-few-puzzles kind of game, and granted, I don't think the Game Boy would have been able to save, so it would have been annoying to just continue to repeat the first, you know, 5 or 10 puzzles, however much you can complete on a car trip, each time you want to boot Lolo up, so they probably would have needed to make it a level select kind of game.
Yeah.
That said, I guess what I mean is like, I'm just thinking about this the way I play NES games nowadays, which is just however I can, you know, if it's not on the original hardware, it's on an emulator. If it's available on Switch, I'll play it on Switch. Like, you know, the best way to play this, is it really like in 1990, was it even to like sit in front of a TV in your living room and like dedicate time like that, or would this have been better served for like that quick burst of energy? And the NES, you know, like console gaming is more reserved for these larger epic experiences like Super Mario Brothers 3.
I mean, the reason that I like it on a handheld, I don't know, you know, specifically the Game Boy, like if we end up talking technical, like I don't know, but like, yeah, like it does for me, that's the exact experience that like I was getting out of this, is like a pick up and play. Like, hey, I'm going to play another level of Adventure of Lolo right now because I got 15 minutes. Like, you know, I could see myself playing like a level on the subway on a commute or something. So, like, I think that, not that, like, yeah, not that it's in like a bad place on a console, but I think that it's maybe just more like, seems more like more the kind of thing that I would play on handheld.
Is this the kind of game where as you're going room to room, climbing the tower, solving these puzzles, you kind of forget about the mission, the story, the whole like goal.
Yeah, I don't really know what's going on here, and you don't need to. I mean, this is very much window dressing in terms of plot. Like the only puzzle games off the top of my head that were really plot forward were, again, the, you know, Portal, but also something like Talos Principle, but that was more so here's a bit of puzzles and then here's a bit of story. It was very like separated in that way, and in this one you just start like getting sort of like intimidated by this dude, and then you walk into the tower and then it's all puzzles all the time until the very end.
Yeah, it needed like that as you're climbing the tower, even just Pac-Man style cutscenes of like, here's just a quick little thing of like what's going on with, I don't know, I guess her name's Lola. I'm making that up. I don't know what her name is, but
probably Lulu.
I think it was Lola.
Lola sounds right. They show up in Kirby, if you recall. We talked about how they are like one of the bosses,
or Lila,
in the Kirby series. So, which is weird because they're not enemies.
Or Layla.
They're not villains in this game. thank you for those, Sean. Those are good options. All this to say that, yeah, no, it doesn't matter. And yeah, until you get to the 50th room and face off against King Edgar, you would have completely forgotten, if you're even just me, like, what are you collecting the hearts for? Are those the hearts that Lola left behind? Should we even be thinking about that kind of stuff? I don't
know. The hearts, like, are these metaphorical hearts?
Yeah, like her love was in this room.
Like, is it like each of these hearts that you're picking up are like a memory that you guys had together, but at the end of the game, you realize that they were all kind of bad memories and it's actually a breakup game?
I feel like this game is kind of like the game version of Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind.
There are, through the means of using passwords, if you type in Pro A, Pro B, Pro C, or Pro D, you can unlock 4 hidden pro puzzle rooms, which are available for players who want to try very challenging rooms. I don't know if you know, Joe, maybe you want to go back and check these out. They were just like beyond my means, and I even looked up like on game FAQs like the solutions, and I was like, wow, didn't think that they could get this involved. So pretty cool that they are thinking about people who have solved the Adventures of Lolo and are looking for even that additional challenge. Just gonna throw this away though from Lolo 2 for a second, and just any other examples of hidden content in video games that you guys either love or remember, don't have to necessarily love it.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I love a good, like, post-game, like, really hard, I feel like all I ever talk about is, like, Final Fantasy or Kingdom Hearts, but, like, you know, there's always, like, an Ultima weapon in Final Fantasy to fight, but if we're talking, like crazy hard versions of a level, I like the, in the re-release, the recent, like, PS4 remake of Crash Bandicoot, they added some like levels that were meant to be in the original game that were too hard, which are really cool. Like they're very like, I feel like at least the one of them is like, it's like the epitome of like Crash Bandicoot difficult levels.
That's a really tough question, and I need to prepare for that more. I guess fun cheats are cool, like the big head mode is kind of an old thing that for a while games were expected to have something like that, but when a game has something to that effect that you wouldn't have originally expected it to have, some Paradox games have some goofy stuff, like if one of your stats is, it's like stat level is 69, and the description will be nice. like little things like that I enjoy. Like Easter eggs are fun, but I can't think of any specific ones.
That's
right
fine.
Now.
That's fine. No. And hidden content is true in both regards. Like, you both nailed it, because Joe's right that, like, yeah, the Ultima weapon isn't hidden, right? Like, it's not spelled out for the player either. It's not like you unlock the Ultima weapon side quest. You just kind of have to know about it or go about procuring the items to get it, right? Same thing with in Final Fantasy VII, fighting the two optional ultimate bosses. They're not hard to find, but you also have to seek them out on your own. The game doesn't say, like, can't fight Sephiroth until you defeat Omega Weapon. Like, it doesn't work like that.
I do have a better one now. Like Bloodborne is, half that game is stuff like that. Like there's a queen that if you turn her into goo, then she's immortal, and like she will sort of remember all your previous playthroughs when you start a new one. The way to see the final ending is to eat a bunch of goo that you're not like told to eat, and then like you get reborn as goo. There's a lot of goo, but like, it's a game that is based around, like, really obtuse shit like that.
I love the idea of, like, a character that remembers your previous playthroughs.
Yeah. When everything else sort of resets, it's weird.
Yeah.
Sean, would you consider the dog ending of Silent Hill 2 a hidden content thing?
I would say so. The requirements for that are so specific.
Not hidden content, but certainly feeling like it this week, is talking about Adventures of Lolo 2 head-on. Instead, we have mostly been talking about what we would change or what we did expect or what we think of puzzle games in general. So I think, more importantly, in our next section, we should really talk about whether we liked or disliked specifically Adventures of Lolo 2, and I can't think of a better section to do that in than the Essential Games List. Adventures of Lolo 2 is the sequel to a game that I think still, as of right now, should be on the Essential Games List, and that is the Adventures of Lolo 1. Had the Adventures of Lolo 1 growing up, I had a great time with it. I always thought that the puzzles were really fun, and Adventures of Lolo 2 was not something I had, so this is really my first time going through it. And it's kind of funny that, for me at least, I never sought out, like, Adventures of Lolo 2 and 3, even though I know that they exist. Like, playing 1, I was never like, oh, I should see if I can get a copy of 2 and 3. Like, 1 was enough. And I think that's the headline here as I talk about Adventures of Lolo 2. It's the weird opposite thing where it's like, you know, some people ask us about Mega Man games and being like, well, shouldn't Mega Man 1 be off if Mega Man 2 is on there? And that's a whole different kind of conversation, but usually you expect the sequel to be bigger and better. And I feel like the steps that they took in Lolo 2 from the beginning to assume that the player has played 1 and not necessarily, you know, baby step you into the process and slowly ramp up the difficulty curve, but instead just kind of have it start at a level that is challenging to players. Not incredibly challenging, but you get the idea. I think Adventure of Lolo 1 is the more, like, complete product, and as I believe Sean might have been the first one to say in this episode, Adventure of Lolo 2 is really, like, the modern-day equivalent of DLC or Disc 2 or a puzzle map. It feels like something I would have gotten from, like, you know, from, like, a Nintendo Power giveaway. Is like, you know, oh, we made 50 more levels of Adventures of Lolo if anybody wants to buy it off of us. Like, enter this contest or something like that. Like, it doesn't feel like it's actually worth the full retail price if you already own Adventures of Lolo 1. Like, I already got that, so I don't need it here again. Be curious to see if Lolo 3 just continues to add more puzzles or if they actually change those features. But for those big reasons, Adventures of Lolo 2 will not be on the Essential Games List for me. Joe?
I lost sight of a couple things during the episode proper because we were talking about all these positives about it, and there are some things I didn't like about Adventures of Lolo 2. Granted, I think that they are things we talked about in Adventures of Lolo 1, but the main one being the movement system, which sounds funny in, like, a puzzle game, but like we said, there are some levels where you need some, like, twitch reflex parts, and what I just feel like is, like, the weirdest decision is, you know, like, you walk on what, you know, I can imagine the invisible grid that you walk on. Like, you take one step forward and it's exactly like this, you know, it's exactly one of my invisible squares away. But this, the movement that you have and, like, the places that you could push thing are, there's always, like, a half step off of what's useful for anything. I don't know if that's making any sense. Like, you can push something.
I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, you have to push things to the exact spot, which is how these puzzles work. Like, and if you push it too far, sometimes you failed. But, like, sometimes there's, like, you can push it too far, but not far enough.
Yeah, an object can be a certain size. It'll stay the same size, but if it is occupying two squares, its hitbox is now both of those squares.
Right. Exactly, and I suspect that actually there might be some times later in the game where that is useful, but so far where I am, it wasn't useful enough times for me to get over how frustrating that was in times where it's like, okay, I know exactly where I need to go because I figured out this part of the puzzle, but then it's like, it's just hard to tell, like, am I on it or is this next half step the right spot sometimes? So, like, the amount of times that I knew a puzzle and I just, like, put the thing slightly in the wrong spot and had to restart because, like, I couldn't tell. Like, I just feel like they all should have just snapped to somewhat of a grid that's like, okay, you're either here or you're wrong, and there's no, like, this, like, weird in-between that felt pointless. And the reason it really bothered me was during some of those twitch reflex times where you're being chased or you're, you know, you have to do something under it before, like, something respawns, where it's like, the point of the game, in my opinion, is not like, see how much you can finesse the D-pad to get to the right spot. The point is, like, can you outthink this puzzle? So, like, I felt like sometimes I was just like, it was working against me in that way, which didn't seem intended. A little long-winded, but that was my big thing that bothered me in it.
It's sort of funny that I now understand why you're kind of opposed to Mike's request for more like twitchy stuff. Maybe this isn't the right engine for that.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, but that being said, I did really, really enjoy this game. And like I said at the top, I didn't replay the first game prior to starting this one. So I'm not really like one-to-one comparing them, but if I try, if I rack my brains and try to remember how I felt about the first one, I think I liked this one better. So even if it is like, okay, it is like this sort of DLC pack of new levels, I would suspect if I go back and play Lola 1, which I will do before we do the best of, I would think that, and if I had to pick just one of them, I would think I would pick this one. Not that I necessarily have to, but I guess all this to say, I will be voting this to be an essential game, despite it being kind of more levels of Adventures of Lola 1, because in my memory, these are better levels. So yes, I'm voting it essential.
All right, I guess that means it's me now.
It is you.
I also really enjoy this game. However, you know, between the different rubrics and the coexistences of things, like, I think in some regards, the fact that this is, even though I do agree with Joe too, like that there's enough here, even though it's just sort of the same, I still enjoy it. Like, I'd still play this game, but I think that a little bit more needs to change in order for this to be eligible for the essential games list, for them both to be there. So I'm going to vote no, but, you know, in whatever year in 2026, I'll play both again. Joe can hold me to it so that, you know, we can come to an agreement on what deserves to be here. Like, the quality of this game is of essential quality, but, you know, maybe there isn't room for, maybe the town isn't big enough for the two of them, you know?
And I would just, yeah, I would argue that my point was is that, yeah, like, if the town isn't big enough for the two of them, the first one is the better, like, overall game, and the second one is just more levels, where the first one kind of, you know, walks you through the ideas and the puzzles, you know, a little more user-friendly than the second one does. The second one doesn't feel like the rooms are evolving from room to room. They're just more like, here are some other puzzles we thought about using the Lolo system.
I gotta just say I disagree with that last part there. I really felt like the rooms were evolving in this one. And I don't remember the first one, so maybe they evolved more.
No, I don't mean evolving like that, though. I meant evolving in the sense of, like, what you learned in the first stage, then you use in the second stage. It constantly introduces the mechanics to you. Not that, like, the levels don't feel the same throughout two. Yeah, the levels change a lot, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it's almost too drastically that the levels are changing.
I'd say that, like, basically the tutorialization that you saw in the first one, because the concepts were new, have been minimized because the game assumes you've played this before. So as a complete package, it is somewhat lesser. So, like, it's easier to be a newcomer in Adventures of Lolo than it is in Adventures of Lolo 2.
Yeah, I'm not trying to just be, like, argumentative, but, like, I still don't necessarily, like, fully agree. I really do think that, yeah, I mean, I guess I agree that, like, maybe the first one has, like, it is more tutorialized, but, like I said, like, I really don't remember, like, I didn't remember any of these mechanics from the first one, but this game did a great job of making me learn them each time, and I did feel like things that I learned early on in, like, the first tower came back in later towers, like the Medusa heads. Like, there's a Medusa head in this tower. The next tower, there's, like, five Medusa heads. Like, now I gotta think of how they work together. So, like, I don't know. I guess I just saw it differently. Like, I see what you're saying as far as like the first one being more tutorialization, but I didn't feel like I needed it. And maybe that is because I played the first one and subconsciously I remember that stuff, but I don't think I did.
Adventures of Alola 1 starts in first gear, and Adventures of Alola 2 starts in top gear, and the game that we are playing next week, Al Unser Jr.'s Turbo Racing, makes you switch between all the gears. It is a racing game, borderlining that arcade simulation thing. Write-in does if you know who Al Unser Jr. is. Apparently he's from Formula One or something in that world, maybe Indy 500. Is that the same thing? I don't know.
IndyCar is different.
Indy's different. So see, this is how much I know. So I'm going to just become a diehard F1 fan by this time next week so that I can speak intelligently about these things. In the meantime, if you're looking for more nostalgia, don't forget that there's 270 plus episodes of nostalgia to listen to. Did you listen to them all? We will find out. If you did listen to them all, there's also a Patreon page, patreon.com/nostalgia, where you can listen to all of the other stuff that we make for people that aren't you right now because you aren't a subscriber. So think about that. There's content out there. You're like, I've listened to it all, and I'm here to tell you, no, you haven't. There's a whole nother podcast there. Occasionally, there's other audio there. It's all uploaded there first, so don't you want it earlier? Doesn't really work like that, but you get the idea.
It's like the hidden features in Adventures of Alola 2. It's actually a much harder podcast to listen to. It's very difficult.
Yeah, and technically, like, you do need a password.
That's true.